refugees. Never has there been a time when so many refugees are on the world stage. Today we're going to be talking with somebody who's doing something about it. One individual putting her faith into action. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the spiritual, the emotional, the psychological, and the physical. This is episode number 460 of The Next Step, and I'm inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The Next Steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
Have you ever thought about the word redeemer? The word redeem. We say we are redeemed by our Savior, right? We are redeemed by Jesus Christ. We are redeemed by a Savior. Two separate words, to be saved and to be redeemed. I really didn't think about it all too much until this past week. I had to give a lecture out in Malibu, of all places. Beautiful place. It was at a Franciscan monastery, and it was a group of ladies of the Armenian Church, and I had to speak about God, our Redeemer. And interestingly enough, in Armenian, as I spoke, as I prepared for it, I looked up the word redeemer because the only word that came to my mind was pergel, pergich. And that's the word for savior, one who saves us. In English, it's two separate words, isn't it? In Armenian, pergel. It's actually, there are words, it's a way of defining it, to redeem. Well, what do? We redeem coupons, don't we? We purchase things. We redeem. God purchased us. There was a price to be paid. Interesting, at the baptism, this is the precondition to salvation, right? Jesus says, unless you are born of water and the Spirit, the precondition to salvation. You have to get in through baptism, right? What do we say in the Armenian Church? We say that the child is baptized in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, the formula for Christian baptism. And then we say, redeemed from servitude to sin. Redeemed from servitude to sin. So we use that word in the Armenian Church, but when you look at the classical Armenian, it says, kenyel aryampan Christosi. Redeemed is purchased. Redeemed is purchased by the blood of Christ. God pays the price. He redeems us. Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Isn't that beautiful? The ransom is paid in the Old Testament terms. The ransom is paid. It was interesting for me because it was a development. You know, when I speak at these events, I sometimes look at them as challenges. When I speak, of course, my primary language, my first language, I should say, was Armenian. But growing up in America, your first language becomes English. And so today, when I have a chance to speak, every Sunday when I have a chance to speak in Armenian, I look at it as a challenge. And so too, with this one, it gave me an opportunity really to reflect on that word, redeem. And the ancient Armenian word, kanyal, aryampan Christosi, to be purchased with the blood of Christ. That's the redemption. Anyway, I just had to share that with you. We're going to be talking about a different kind of salvation. We're going to be talking about refugees. What's going on right now? We have guest today, Yvette Hovsepian-Birs. She's going to be on the show, an interview I did with her, and share some ideas about refugees, share some ideas about faith, about religion, about where we are today in the world. I know I promised this to you a couple weeks ago, and I'm delivering on that promise today, okay? How's that work out? Anyway, toward the end of the show, we'll be making some announcements. We've got an alternative service coming out. Also, people have been asking about the Lenten journey. This past year, I haven't put out a Lenten journey. And you've been so kind in propagating the ones from the past years. I didn't do a Lenten journey this year. What I'm going to do is I'm going to be sharing with you a very special Holy Week broadcast, and I'll tell you about that towards the end of today's show. That's going to be coming up in lieu of the Lenten journey, that we're already past the hump point, right? We're already past midpoint Lent. I had a chance to celebrate, celebrate three midpoints. In Armenian, we call it Michink, the midpoint of Lent. And these are usually done with fanfare because it's sort of like the hump day, right? You kind of celebrate. There's more behind you than there are days in front of you. So it's always a festive occasion and an opportunity for us to pray together and to share together some of our thoughts. I had a chance to do three of them. In my new position, I get to go around to so many churches. I was with the Santa Clarita Armenian Church, St. Sarkis, last week. I was at St. Leon Cathedral in Burbank. I was at Costa Mesa at St. Mary Church, and all these places, just beautiful, beautiful people coming together and sharing this very special period, which we call Lent. And with that, let me transition to what we're going to be doing today. A few weeks ago, I shared with you that we had an occasion to hear Yvette Hovsepian Birce talk about the refugee situation, the crisis, her work particularly in Germany, and about her faith, what motivates her to do these things. I've known her for many, many years. First time that we had a chance to hear her speak in such a format, and both my wife Susan and I, we looked at each other, we said, wow, this is something that has to be presented on a larger platform. And I was so pleased that yesterday we had a chance to sit down in front of a mic, have a conversation, and I want to share that with you today, our listeners. Her story is inspirational. It's one that talks about faith in action, and as it inspired us, I hope it will inspire you to move from faith to action, or action in faith. Today, here in the studio, is Yvette Hovsepian Birce. Welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, Father Vazgen. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, a couple weeks ago, I've shared with our listeners, and today you're in the studio. A couple weeks ago, I had the opportunity to hear you at Abril Bookstore. You spoke about your work with refugees, about the entire situation with refugees in the world, and you have this incredible background, which really excites me, doing here the next step about your faith, the faith that you grew up with, having been born in Iran, seeing the Islamic revolution, living through that. You have an incredible story that needs to be told, so I'm really glad you're here today. Thank you for being here. And how about if we start off, tell us a little bit about what's going on in the world, the refugees, and so on.
Surely. So if we look at the statistics today in the world, we have 65 million displaced people. These are people that they have fled their home due to either war, conflict, or natural disasters, hunger, political unrest, and out of them, 21.3 million are refugees. Half of them are, according to UN statistics, are young people, 18 and younger. And if we look at reports prepared by our State Department about human trafficking, or we go to UN documents, we see that most of these young people become prey of criminals, terrorists, drug traffickers, sex traffickers, and they become child soldiers. So what do we do with these children?
Can you explain that term, child soldier? It may be not understood by everybody.
Sure. A lot of terrorists, including Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and other branches of terrorism, they take these children as young as even 5 or 6, mm-hmm. and they put them at their borders. Mm-hmm. Or they use them as explosive devices. And they give them guns to fire, and they teach them. They you know, in some ways they actually steal these children, and they try to put their ideology in them. They try to form them into their own military. That's how ISIS grew so much. That's how Al-Qaeda is so big.
And when you say children, you're actually talking about under 12?
Yeah, absolutely. Under 12. As young as 3, 4, 5, yeah. 6. And if you read the reports that prepared by, like I said, by our government and international community, the statistics are there, the proofs mm-hmm. are there. Mm-hmm. And if you look at some of the pictures of the ISIS camps and the Hezbollah camps and Al-Qaeda camps, you see children there. Mm-hmm. And then the women, young girls, as young as 6 or 7, they become their prey for their sexual advances. Mm. So they bring them and they use them for their terrorist groups. They use them for their own sexual means because they feel that, you know, they're serving their vision of a fate, and so they deserve.
Okay, well, if I can ask you, this is, I guess, something that we in the West have a hard time understanding, because it's not just a religion, but it's an entire mindset and its entire way of life. What you talk about is, obviously, there's brainwashing, there's influences that are beyond what we can imagine through coercion and everything. So what is it exactly? What is the promises that are made? Like, I know, for instance, you saw regime changes. You were born during the regime of the Shah of mm-hmm. Iran. Later on, you saw the fundamentalists come in, Ayatollah Khomeini. What happens? What is this transition about? What is it that we in the West need to be aware of?
What we need to understand is that there's an ideology out there. Mm-hmm. And so the ideology often is able to create that bridge with the person who is displaced. For example, one of the things that these terrorists, for example, do, mm-hmm. that they subject the young people in this world into, you know, committing criminals and bringing them into their camp. Most of these displaced people have no hope. These children have no place. So most of them have lost their parents. So they need someone to care for them. Mm-hmm. They need someone to be that mother or father to them. They need a plate of food. Mm-hmm. In Sudan today, most of the children are dying from hunger. Mm-hmm. Someone comes, and if you look at our President Trump's immigration ban, Sudan was one of the countries mm-hmm. that he barred because he is accusing Sudan for exporting terrorism. Yet at the same time, we have millions of children dying from hunger. Mm-hmm. So that explains there is some connection between hunger and terrorism.
Okay.
Between depriving someone from future hope and life and crime. If we look at the stories of some of the terrorists even in the United States that committed terrorism, most of them, they did because either they had some criminal background or they were deprived of some hope or they wanted to belong to something or they wanted to be heroes. And this is when terrorism come, criminals come, and they do that for these people, mm-hmm. for the displaced human beings. They say, you know, I will give you hope, I will give you a place, I will give you a vision, I will give you a purpose for your life.
I see.
And this is where we have an obligation to feel.
Well, you say an obligation, and actually I'm going to, let's put a bookmark on that because I do want to get back to what you said, like the children are hungry. We have an obligation. So let's go back to that unique set of circumstances in which you grew up. You grew up in Iran during a very westernized society. You saw the downfall of the Western influence with the downfall of the Shah, and then you saw Islamic fundamentalists come in. What was that experience? How did that go? And can you tell us a little bit about your personal reflections on that? Because I know you were a refugee, right? You left.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us a little bit about that?
So yes, I grew up during the Shah's regime at a time when we had, all kinds of people in Iran, the Western world was working in Iran. We had a lot of Americans, and so I grew up in a very diverse society with Muslims and with Jews and Americans and other Westerners and people from all kinds of backgrounds. So I was about 10 when we started hearing some unrest coming about, but I was 12 years old when, in 1978, the revolution started escalating. And I never forget, actually, this one summer night, summer morning, when I was standing in my dad's carpentry store. He had put me in charge. I was 12 years old, and he went to the bank, and he said, "Yvette, can you look at the look after the store until I come back?" So I was standing behind this large glass that he had and looking outside in my shorts and in my T-shirt with my long black hair hanging from my shoulders down to my waist. And I looked and I was hearing this voices of men shouting, this anger. And all of a sudden I look out and they're like by hundreds. And to my young mind, it probably looked like thousands, but they were by hundreds coming down and shouting anti-Shah slogans and calling for an Islamic government, an Islamic rule. And I never forget when I looked outside and I thought to myself, my life is over. I told to myself that, Yvette, your life has changed forever and it will never be the same.
You made that realization at age 12.
I did. And it came true. So the Islamic government came into power. And the other thing was that, and this is why I am very in tune to how extremists are able to bait the young children. Remember, at that moment, I felt hopeless. I felt there was no future at age 12. Okay. And then when the Shah left the country on January 16, 1979, and I watched it on the news, here was our king with the empress going up the stairs of the plane, into a plane, and leaving the country. I was sitting there, I remember, at age, I had just turned 13, and I'm thinking, this is it, we're orphans.
Abandonment.
We are abandoned and we are orphans. As a country, we are orphans and we don't have a leader. What are we going to do? You see the connection? Mm-hmm. How a lot of these displaced people, young children, may feel like that?
Right.
And then when Khomeini came, so I'm making connecting the dots for you, how extremists use these feelings,
I like
right?
That. Yeah, yeah.
When Khomeini came, just less than a month later, on February 1st, he walked. I will never forget the scene on TV when Khomeini came out of the plane and he stood there for a moment on those stairs, almost the same type of stairs that my king and my leader left me abandoned and an orphan. Another leader, as extremist and radical his views that I did not understand or agree with. But another leader came, and when he waved at the people, and I heard the shout and joy of the audience outside, praising and joyous that this leader, their leader has come. While I never agreed with anything that was happening, I had peace. Because for a moment, as a young 13-year-old girl, I felt we're not orphans anymore. At least we have someone to look after us. At least we are not abandoned. While we see our American friends non-existent anymore, while our Shah is gone, while most of our leaders have abandoned us, while America is not behind us anymore, we do have someone. Hopefully he'll take care of us. You see the vulnerability of a young person right there?
Right.
So when you talk about my passion to go out there and help these vulnerable people, is because I know these extremists know where they're tapping on.
Mm. I mean, that's beautifully said, because so when we think about like that South Sudan situation you said about giving the food, and it's like who's going to protect these people?
Yes.
Those are going to be the people that are at the end of it are going to
Let's talk about Palestine for a second.
Yeah, sure.
I am someone who has for years done research to make sure that, you know, I am pro-Israeli. And I believe that we need to, you know, advance security in the Middle East. But let's look at Palestine for a second. Why does Hamas is able to conduct all their operations so effectively? We have about 5 million displaced Palestinians. Most of them are orphan children. Well, Hamas taps on them. When you hear Ayatollah Khamenei talk about Hamas and Hezbollah, what is the first thing he says about them? He says they're not terrorist organizations. They are organizations that they care for their people. They provide them food. They provide them place to sleep. They take care of them. They are they're attending to their Islamic duties. That's how they tap on, you know, the hearts of the displaced world, and they are able to put their ideology in their heads, and they increase their power. So I'm thinking, you know, our government came and wanted to, in their effort to try to create, establish greater national security for Americans. So they came and devised a policy thinking that this would give advance to our national security through the immigration ban. Yet what we have done is that we have not only given rise to greater hostilities in the region, but we have created an environment where those hopeless people are going to, they themselves are going to try to find a place that they can find future and hope. And what they will do is, instead of they rely on Americans or people who care about them, they will go to the terrorists. In fact, what we are doing is we're giving rise to more terrorism, and we're actually increasing their soldiers.
It's about a good time to take a break right now, kind of like section off into two parts of this interview. No. Don't worry. I'm going to come back with the rest of the interview. But we play a song every week, a song of the day. Appropriately today, we've picked out a song from Gor Mkhitaryan, Immigrant.
Rrisam mes hamar Emigrant dhe mejran unë dhe shbaktabar Anë ma ta khilu po këtë mes të rritës Dhe nge këllën që gjitësin që jetë e vitës Pat ma kanë nartaru që janë të sankjonitës A me një shkirkën vëmë e loritës u loritës Me në katë mesel voqin që së vore cink Rasul me ngot të khatës e në të khkatës Pa djes gjitëm me në kinë qanënk Nakh që të vasënk të bënd që gjitënk Harki as të pëkun me në glavel gjitënk Unë mi shpesu vonë së vërt të khshinënk Të hubohitës Peha kanë nërta drucja mutant në rritës Gorilla e kanë lushi i rëvun kitës Men kuknel në gverje shkicu me zanitës Nora hajtë vahë këtu cionit Artën asgajin e si vandocionis U kronika kanë cuj lënë gorzucionis Menk pahan këtë epitun, majrën rusastan Pa tjes gjitëm me në kinë qanënk Як чи це власник, ти банче гітинг, харки роздипкуминг, лавель гітинг, уміш без бортих у євшінинг.
Unmistakable talent and voice of Gor Mkhitaryan, playing a song called Immigrant, appropriate for today, isn't it? As we're going to be seeing in a few minutes, too, when we get back to the interview. This is off of his Passport album, an album we put out together with In Issues sponsorship last year. It is about social issues, this one particularly about the immigration crisis, and It's part of a larger story that we have to tell about walking in the shoes of others, sharing in the pain of others. I hope you're feeling that today in this interview we're having with Yvette Ofsepian-Birce. We're going to return to that right now. That was Gor Mkhitaryan, Immigrant from the Passport album. We'll have a link on today's show notes to all of his good music. Okay, we're going to make a transition from revolution, from terrorism. Fundamentalism, terrorism, to now faith, issues of faith. Yvette, you used an expression here, Islamic duties, in terms of what sometimes people use to incite and to do work, good or bad. I want to ask you about Christian duties. I shared with our listeners about your mother's story, about your mother's faith a few weeks ago, about this beautiful story that you reflected upon, she told you, if you are truly a Christian, what are you scared about losing your faith? Go out there and be the best Christian. In other words, get out of your Christian bubble. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to explore this next portion of our show, our next portion of our interview. Your personal faith, I know you went through seminary as well, your personal faith, how it influences you to do the duty to help others.
I think that one of the things that my mom and my Christian faith influenced me is that it is God has called us to attend to his creation. He has called us to take care of his creation. He said, go and prosper. Go and take care of what I have given to you. And I think that often as Christians, we just become so religious that we think that there, Christianity or our faith is just this outline of a framework that we have to function within, this framework and these rituals that we have to do. Yet Jesus was a very practical person. He came into this world to bring about a change. That's what he did. He brought a change. He brought about healing. He brought about a newness into his society. Jesus impacted impacted his entire political system. He impacted his entire social system. He created a new way of life. And so if we follow Jesus' examples, just in a practical sense, then we see that, you know, it is our obligation as people of faith, as Christians, to not only impact our own lives and people very close to us, but we have an obligation to impact our societies. We need to engage in this world and not live in this small bubble that is all about me and limit ourselves. Does this mean that we all are able to go out there in the world and become missionaries or move from city to city or country to country? No. But it's that, you know, we all look and say, within the place that I am and I have capabilities, what kind of changes can I implement? Mm-hmm. And what is there that I can do to impact that society in a positive way?
In your personal story, I know that you get out there to Germany, and Germany has had a very special meaning for you. And today, much of your work is focused mm-hmm. with the refugees that are in Germany. Can you tell us a little bit
sure.
about those details?
I was 18 and a half when my father and my parents decided that it was time for us to leave the country. We had gone through Islamic Revolution, then lived through Iran-Iraq War, which started in 1980. I had not even turned 14 yet when the war started. And so my father was a person that had higher vision for his daughters, his children. He wanted to see his daughters become educated and to become productive people in their mm-hmm. societies. He always called me a diplomat. And he said, someday you will become a diplomat. And so he had a vision for his daughters to make some changes in their given societies. But as Christians and Armenians, we were not able to do anything in that Islamic society. So he decided it was time for us to leave. So in order for us to come to the United States, we had to go through one of the European countries as refugees. And Germany back then, even back then in 1984, Germany had this open, welcome society. Mm-hmm. And so we lived in refugee camp for 18 months. So I spent most of my sort of like teenage or post-teenage years in a refugee camp. And that's when at an very vulnerable age that you are trying to formulate your future and try to figure out who you are, what you want to do, yet you see yourself confined in a place where there seems absolutely no hope probably for future. And so, what Germany did for me is that they gave me future hope and life that is found in Jeremiah 29:11. Future hope and life. They embraced me at a time when I was most vulnerable. They gave me a place to live when I had no home anymore. They made me to become part of their society when I didn't have people. I didn't have a place to belong to. And the camp people, those who were overseeing the refugee camp, became my friends. Mm. When I had no one to call friend, I had left everything. I don't want to sound very poetic in here, but it's the reality of life that you are so vulnerable. My father, when we were leaving, asked us not to say goodbye to anyone. We were able to say goodbye only to our grandmother and a few of our cousins. Most of our relatives didn't know we were leaving. None of our friends knew we were leaving because he was afraid that there would be consequences for him when he stays behind mm-hmm. by the government. So it is very difficult when you feel like you've been yanked from where everything is familiar to you and suddenly put in a place in a camp where there are people from all over the world that you are afraid. You see violence. You see anger. You see hunger. You see hopelessness. And when the other who is so different from you, i.e. German, comes and embraces you, that leaves an everlasting impact on you. And this is what I am saying, is that in the absence of Yvette, Father Wasgen, or anyone else who is listening, if we don't go out there and embrace the vulnerable, even the vulnerable who is our neighbor, someone else will embrace them, and that someone else will put their ideology in their head.
So you're coming down to a very, very fundamental reality. It's not because of ideologies that people follow a certain religion or a certain God, right? Yeah. It comes down to who is my friend at that moment.
Yes.
Is that how simple it is?
Yes. Who is going to take care of me? Who is going to give me a place to live tonight? Mm-hmm. I have been in that place, which I don't want to bring that here right now. Mm-hmm. But as an adult in America, I have found myself at some point homeless, mm-hmm. at some point where I didn't have a place to live, at the most vulnerable time of my life where I was abandoned by almost everyone I knew. So as an adult, also I understand that abandonment, both at a time when I was 12 years old and I see my entire political system is changing. Then I see my leader is leaving. Then I see another leader coming and giving hope. Then I leave my country and I find myself as a refugee. And in my hopelessness, I find a community and hope. Then as an adult at age 28, I'm abandoned because of my circumstances that I didn't have control over it anyway. I was a victim of my circumstances, yet I was abandoned. And so I understand that hopelessness one can feel, and how someone else can come and feel that hope. That's as simple as it is.
Profound, profound. And now you're out there, you went out to Germany and you worked with refugees today, right?
Yes. I mean, yeah.
And that's, I think, the full circle.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear a little bit about that too, because I know you shared with it at your speech, but our listeners would love to hear that.
So in 2015, I had already published my book, and
which is
Political Ideology of Ayatollah Khamenei, the current Supreme Leader of Iran. And and so I had provided already a tool for our policymakers to go and understand Iran and make decisions on their nuclear deals. And so at the same time, my mother had passed away. And while I was grieving mom's loss, I saw on TV that the outside world was falling apart. I saw the influx of these refugees, primarily from Syria, into Europe. And into a country that I call it home, Germany. And so, as you can tell, I have emotional connection with Germany. I shared that I still have, after 31 years, I still maintain my friendship with my German family. And so when I saw these people going through waters and by feet, and all I can think from human perspective and my scholarly perspective, where I have done so much work and research on terrorism, and I have worked for intelligence community in counterterrorism, so I know from inside and out what is going on, and done studies on human trafficking. So all I can think about this chaos that is happening and these vulnerable people that can become prey, mm-hmm. And how so much hopelessness is just going everywhere. And when I saw Aylan, the little three-year-old Syrian boy dead by Turkish waters, that's when I thought, okay, that's it. I have to do something about it.
That was your enough moment.
That was enough. The moment.
Yeah.
And so I purchased a ticket. I called my husband, Greg, and I said, I'm leaving for Germany. He said, when? I said, next week. He says, where are you going? I said, I'm going to go help with refugees. He said, oh, you sign up with an organization. I said, no, I have not signed up with any organization. I'm just going to fly into Frankfurt, get off the plane, and go to work. And he said, I hope you have a plan, Yvette, because my husband is military and very plan-oriented. I said, you know what? I don't, but God does.
Wow, that's faith.
I said, all I'm going to do is get there, and I have connections. I mean, I have my German friends there, so I wasn't not too practical about it. I contacted my friends, and I immediately told them, I'm coming in next Monday. Refugee camps, connect me to it. And my friends were like, you know, what? What are you doing? And so I just went there and I made one connection and from one connection to the next. And I traveled throughout Germany from, you know, south to north. And I started speaking at conferences, met people who work with refugees and went into the camps, went into classrooms, sat with Arabs and Tajikis, Iranians, Afghanis, Syrians, Iraqis, and try to speak their languages. And look, my Arabic is as elementary as possible. My German is kind of like elementary to, you know, intermediate. But that's, I didn't allow my language skills or lack of it to stop me from reaching out.
You were speaking a higher language, weren't you? I mean, obviously.
So, yeah.
Taking you there. Don't worry about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had a chance to listen to your story a few weeks ago, and it is really certainly a moving story. It's an inspirational story. And I hope that there'll be an opportunity to hear this. Do you have plans of publishing that story, or especially the work that you're doing as a form of inspiration for others, even in the form of a blog or something? Does it exist someplace?
It doesn't, because I never really had the opportunity to do it. I didn't know how to do it, uh-huh. But I'm just kind of like formulating it. If anyone wants to come and collaborate and help me do it, they're welcome.
Okay.
Yes, I do have a huge box of research and thousands of pictures I brought from Germany that they can become. Either a book, blogs, or they can become a little movie, a documentary. And so, but I just want to conclude, make a connection,
yes,
the
yes,
dot,
please,
the
please.
Circle dot, because,
yes.
Because, okay, going into Germany and working, okay, some people are going to say, okay, what's the big deal? I don't have any connections to Germany. You probably had the opportunity to do it, and so it probably was easy for you. But what I want to make the connection in here is, go 31 years back to an 18-year-old girl when she did not have hope, mm-hmm. and a place and a people. These people came and became her people, gave her hope, gave her food, gave her place, gave her a society. 31 years later, she grows up. She does her studies. She goes her own way. She does her scholarly work, raises a family, does her own thing. But yet she never forgets what the other did for her. So the country that she chooses is the same country that gave her life and hope. So she goes back to that country to give back to the same people who gave her a place. Do you see the circle?
Absolutely.
And the cycle?
Absolutely.
This is what I'm talking about. Those 18 and younger children in the world. I shared the story of this little Iraqi girl, the first refugee that I welcomed into Germany. I shared the story about her that, you know, I welcomed her and how I held her in my arms. And she can't wait to see me when I'm going back in May 15th for 2 months. I'm looking forward to reconnecting with some of the refugees I work with to see how they have advanced in their lives. But what the story I shared is that if we invest in this two-year-old, how do we know in 3 decades later who she can become and how she can give back to the
Absolutely.
Society. That's the whole thing. This is what the essence of this entire calling is, that God calls us to be proactive. Jesus was a proactive, revolutionary, political, religious person. And we have to just follow his example.
Wow. Beautifully said. No, and it's a perfect place to, like, maybe put a bookmark. I'm not ending this conversation right now. We're going to continue. I know after we publish this tomorrow, people will want more. So I hope that you'll be open for a little bit more discussion. But I do want to say that if there's a way of collaborating on certain projects, you know that what you describe right now is basically our In Issues mission for the last the people that are listening. We've had people here for the last 10 years. Before that, people who've been on this campaign of trying to help others, not for any other reason, not for political reasons, but because it's the right reason. And so we've been out there in Darfur or in Rwanda, mm-hmm. and these are places that nobody could understand why we would be there. Politically, mm-hmm. it doesn't make sense. Religiously, it doesn't make sense. They're not Christian, and, you know, why are we there in Darfur? But it is a human situation. It's a human condition. And how do we address ourselves as human beings? And that's why I appreciated so much your identifying Christ as Jesus, as a revolutionary, as somebody who was making faith relevant, mm-hmm. practical.
Yes.
If we lose that practicality, I don't know. I don't think Jesus would really care about a religion that's all about something in the future or something.
But, it's, you know, right in now. Also in this hostile environment of our political rhetoric about national security also, and look, I come from a perspective that since I worked in national security, I am actually a defender of national security. Mm. And I have sat down and actually interviewed an ex-Hezbollah about his training and how he became an extremist and joined Hezbollah, how he was trained in Iran and became militant. And I, you know, I worked in counterterrorism, and so I understand all of this. And so one of the things that I also want our listeners to understand is that for anyone who has political orientations and they do believe that, you know, what their government is saying, that national security is extremely important, is high priority, then that makes our work even more important. Mm-hmm. It makes our work even more applicable to what we do in the world, that we need to go and take care of the most vulnerable so they don't become prey of those who hate us, the extremists. And at the same time, as God said in Genesis chapter 1, he created, he blessed his creation, and he said, go and prosper, so we can prosper our world.
Full circle.
Full circle.
Thank you. Thank you for coming here. Thank you for being with us. I'm going to, like I said, we'll put a bookmark next week. Mm-hmm. We have Easter coming up. I wish you the best. Very happy Easter. And maybe in a week or two after that, can
Absolutely.
We continue this?
We will.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Yvette.
Thank you.
God bless.
God bless you.
Well, I hope you agree with me. Inspirational, wasn't it? And if you are so inspired to learn more and want to learn more, I definitely recommend you take a look at her website, Yvette Hovsepian-Bierce. I will have a link on today's show notes so you could check out more in-depth, read some of her articles or some of her messages. Also, if you happen to be in the Los Angeles, in the Southern California area, next Thursday, April 6th, she's going to be presenting a lecture at the First German United Methodist Church, located at 556 Glen Oaks Boulevard in Glendale. And it is free of charge. It is open to everyone. If you're in the area, please do make a point of being there and meeting her, and also listening to an incredible lecture, incredible storyteller. I know you're going to enjoy it. That, again, is next Thursday morning, April 6th, at 10:30 in the morning, First German United Methodist Church in Glendale.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you all for your kind thoughts, prayers, all of your support. It goes a long way in continuing this ministry. I truly appreciate it on behalf of everyone here who's really excited about the new areas that we are exploring by the grace of God. We're going to be starting some alternative services sanctioned by the Armenian Church. Yes, sanctioned by Archbishop Hovnan Derderian. These are going to be every Monday evening here in the Los Angeles area. I know it's difficult. You can't come here from South America. You can't come here from Egypt. Our listeners out there in Europe, I don't expect you to be here, but here's something exciting. We're going to try to stream those. I can't promise you the first one, but here's the exciting thing. We're going to be doing them every Monday evening, 7 o'clock our time, Pacific time. And I know that's a problem for the people in Europe, but it's not a problem for people in South America and in Australia, because your time's kind of like South America, you know, maybe a few hours. I know Argentinian people will be late up. They're late already. They're up late already. Man, I went there a few years ago. We went with the family, and it's like middle of the night. You're going out for dinner and everything. So yeah, you could tune in. But if you happen to be here in the States, we'll be Pacific time at 7 o'clock. We're going to be doing the services. It's called alternative services. Each Monday evening is going to be dedicated to a different purpose, whether it's for healing, whether it's for peace in the world. It's going to be thematic, including we're hoping that we'll get to the point of celebrating the Divine Liturgy as well. The possibilities are endless, really. And I'm so thankful. I thank God that He's given us this opportunity to reach out in a very unique and special way, in a unique ministry. And I thank God for the blessings of you, our listeners, who are supportive, are listening and reacting. And I truly appreciate it. God bless you all. And as I've always say, there's really, aside from your donations, I truly appreciate them. Yes, there's a lot of expenses in putting out something like this, but along with that, more importantly, and I truly mean this, more importantly, is your prayers for this ministry. Because when you pray, you heighten in yourself the awareness of a need for this kind of ministry, and you heightened that awareness in others as well. So keep us in your prayer, whether it's in issues, apostle, the theme of Armadoxy, just us personally, me, Father Vazgen, Susie, Ken. I mean, it's part of a bigger project than you might imagine. Remember the clergy. Remember them in your prayers. All of them, you know, they all need your prayers. Your priests, your bishops, like I shared with you, Archbishop Hovnan, he's taking a very big challenge upon himself, and he needs the courage, he needs the strength, and he needs people like us to keep praying. So all of our leaders, they do need that prayer support from all of us. Keep us focused in your prayers. And along with that awareness, share us. Hey, that's the easiest thing you can do, right? It's just a click of the button. And when you hear our podcast, you know, whether you hear us on your favorite podcatcher, on iTunes, whether you're on Facebook listening to it, or at the mothership In His Shoes, take advantage of this technology and share the link. Share it with people and say, hey, here's a program that you should be listening to. And we hope that we'll be worthy of your trust and your confidence as well. Well, we're going to call it a day today. Hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. I want to just let you know that we have held back on doing a Lenten journey this year, 2017, but we will have a very special Holy Week commemoration and broadcast, thematic broadcast. So look forward to that. I'll be giving a prelude to it next week. You know, we all go through the Passion narratives thinking that this is something that happened to Jesus 2,000 years ago. It's actually happening to Jesus right now. It's in the experiences that you feel of betrayal, of misunderstanding, of sharing your love and being crucified for that love. How about that? How about if we take it in that direction as we prepare ourselves for the grand feast of resurrection? I'm going to be celebrating resurrection up in Portland, Oregon. If you happen to be up in that area, look forward to seeing you there. Hey, listen, on behalf of everybody who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, and our very special guest, Yvette Hovsepian-Bierce, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will present and take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath.